Buck, I know I've reviewed this with you before, but in the 80s when you took your official visits, and we were just talking about Arch Manning because there's a story out about some visits he takes this summer, he's going to take starting in June, beginning with Clemson and other schools like that. Was it still when you were visiting, and I'm talking official visits, was it five or what was the rule when you were doing it?
Yeah, it was five. We could take five official visits at the time. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think they had a restriction on unofficial visits, right? But five official is what you could take.
And were you allowed to bring family with you?
I think, yeah, if I remember correctly, on one or two of the trips, I had family with me. But for the most part, I took most of those trips by myself. But I don't think there was a restriction on, you know, having, you know, your mom or your dad come with you on any of those trips that I can remember. If it was, I'm telling on myself.
Well, no. I mean, as long as they pay their own way, I mean, you can bring anybody you want, as far as I know.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think they set it up that way where you could, you know, if you wanted to have family, or if you even had, like, in certain instances where you were going to a place that had family members, they could go see them and then spend some time with you on the recruiting trip. So, yeah, if I remember correctly, I did have family that joined me on one or two of the trips, if I can remember correctly.
And for those of you that probably do know, but if you don't, Buck played his high school ball in Houston and then his college ball at UCLA. Do you remember the visits you took, official visits, and the order you took them?
UCLA was first. Then I get a little fuzzy because I can't remember if it was UCLA, LSU, Stanford, and Notre Dame. I can't remember, but I do remember this about the Notre Dame trip. it was a nice visit. It was cold when I got there, but it wasn't like too bad, you know, I think maybe in the 40s or whatever. But over the course of that weekend, I think they had like a blizzard that blew in. I wasn't able to get out. Usually you left those trips on Sunday. I don't think I could leave until Tuesday. And I mean, it got really bad. And it was so bad that, you know, I had a jacket, it wasn't a super, super heavy jacket coming from Texas. And I remember having some penny loafers and a couple pair of socks. But it was cold. I'll get out on that campus. And I had a great time. I mean, you know, but after a few days, I was like, I don't know. It caught me at the wrong time. But it was good going up there. I can still remember Lou Holtz was just kind of getting his desk together. And Big George Stewart was my recruiting coordinator. So they did a good job of getting me up there. But I just, after that blizzard kind of got me there, I see Stu to this day, and he'll say, man, if we hadn't had that blizzard, we would have had you at Notre Dame. I said, yeah, y'all might have.
I was talking to Tim Brown about this, and he came out of the Dallas area. Were you guys, what class were you in compared to each other? What year would that have been?
I think Tim was 84, so Tim was there. I mean, okay. Alan Pinkett, Tim Brown. I mean, I met all their guys, and they all were just talking about, you know, the opportunity there at Notre Dame and the chance to have a, you know, they felt like they were going to turn it around, and they really did. They became much better during that stretch when they got Tony Rice and, you know, just all the guys I can remember from that era. But, yeah, Tim Brown was up there. I got a chance to hang out with him and Alan Pinkett. And, you know, they know how to roll out the red carpet when you go on recruiting trips because they try to get you with guys that may be from the area that you're from or just they know that can maybe be influential to you as you're visiting those schools.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The last Heisman was there. Tim Brown, the last national championship happened, what, in 88-ish? So that would have been right in that flow of time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and that was the thing. You could tell, Bill, they were building. They were really coming together with a really nice ball club and just vibe. You know, they had struggled for so long that you could tell that they were happy to have Lou Holtz. But they had some talent. And that was the thing that just struck me. I just kept, like, and I even asked them, hey, man, you guys look like you got all the makings. Why haven't you won? And they said, well, we really feel like that's going to change. And I think Coney Rice was a real key piece to that, but also just some of the other skill weapons that they got. And they already had offensive and defensive linemen, you know, and I think that was the difference for them.
We have been talking a couple of different items, Buck, and it just came up, this article about Arch Manning, but also the name, image, likeness thing, which is going to be a big mess. We have no idea what we're getting into here, but Manning, that name, and again, they've got plenty of money, so name, image, likeness is not vital for them, but Buck, what will that name yield in the free market with sponsorships with that name? Who knows?
Well, you know, yeah, and Bill, you know, it's easy for us to say they have money, they have so much money, but what group of people or what organization or what group of folks, no matter how much money they have, are looking to add to it or do more with it, you
right.
know?
Right.
I don't, you know, I'm not saying the Manning family is greedy, but clearly they've that name means a lot, not only in New Orleans, Mississippi, Tennessee. You know, then you look at the places where they've gone as far as, you know, NFL, the New York Giants, the Indianapolis Colts, Denver Broncos. So I'm curious to see, because you're talking about legacy, name, image, and likeness, right? We're not just talking about N of one. We're talking about the whole lineage of the Manning name now that becomes a part of that name, image, and likeness. And how do they do that? How do they parse it out? Because Arch is benefiting tremendously from the name of Archie Manning, but how do they value that? How do they put a price on that? That's the part for me that I'm still curious about. As opposed to a young kid that's come up and started to make his name in college and really has done a good job. I mean, i.e., a Johnny Manziel, who, you know, his family had money also, but I'm just using him as an example because he didn't have a football lineage kind of name. And what would that hold? Because if Johnny Manziel had been coming up in this name, image, and likeness time frame, you know, Johnny Football, I mean, that was some awesome stuff they kind of put behind him as he became the Heisman Trophy candidate and just got more and more valuable throughout the course of his career.
Charles Arbuckle every Tuesday joins us, talks some football. It's going to be interesting, Buck. You and I have covered this, talked about it for a long time, and we're entering an era of name, image, likeness coming up. And also, at some point here, I've been telling the audience, they're about to expand the playoffs. So we're heading somewhere, Buck. I'm not sure where, but we're going there.
Yeah, it's coming. I don't know why people would be shocked, Bill. I mean, you and I, we've talked about this, what, how many years in a row? Even
right.
as the playoff just started, I think there's a couple of things, too. This would be an interesting year because it seems like, you know, Jimbo feels like he has things going down there at Texas A&M, right? He's saying all the right things. Now, let's see if he has the guys to back it up. You know, are there some other teams that could come off a little bit off the radar, but they've been in the conversation, but haven't been able to get to that next step. You know, I'm hearing a lot of things about Oklahoma this year too, about how good they should be, and not just on offense with Spencer Rattler, but from their defense. And let's remember, Oklahoma to me has always been the team when they can play some good, solid defense or just halfway stop people. Their offense is so explosive, it gives them a chance to compete and battle against some other folks. So I'm just kind of curious to see if there are a few teams that have just kind of been right there at the periphery of having opportunities to get in and haven't quite made it. Would this be the year that we see that change? Because, you know, I think everybody knows it's been Clemson, Alabama in some way, shape, or form, one or two, and then, you know, Ohio State has played a role in it. You know, there have been a few other folks. But I think folks are finally saying, hey, when can we see some of these other teams that we know have talent but haven't quite gotten over the hump to get in that mix?
Nick Saban said, and I don't remember when the press conference was, but he said, with the transfer rule, we're not going to lose our good players. They're not leaving Alabama, but we're going to get some good players. And he's right.
Yeah.
He's right.
I mean, you know, anytime a rule is enacted, you got to look over in Tuscaloosa and see how they're interpreting it, right? Whether it's adding the additional coach. Okay, we've had analysts for years, so, yeah, we'll take another extra set of eyes. But we already have all these analysts, these former college head coaches who flamed out somewhere else, maybe didn't make it somewhere else. They're here now, right? So every time there's a rule adjustment, I don't think Nick worries about that. Because I think, though, the thing is, we've always known in college football you've had that season where guys go to school, they maybe spend a year or 2 years, and then they're looking to transfer when it's possible. Now they can do it even sooner. And if you have really good analysts on your staff, if you have really good people that know the lay of the land, you have almost a player personnel department that Alabama and most big schools now have, they don't worry about that because they're always looking at talent. They're always looking, hey, who's thinking about leaving where? Whose mamas and aunties and grandmothers are calling, trying to get their, you know, baby boy back home to Alabama or from another school where they didn't have the experience they thought they would have coming out of high school. It means you're going to start recruiting them when they're in, you know, sophomore, junior year. You're going to keep recruiting them all the way through. And if they call you, it's not tampering. They call you, you reach out to them, and they get in that transport portal, then you got to be aggressive in that. So I'm assuming, and I don't know this to be true, but I am almost 100% certain that every college that has analysts, player personnel, people, whatever you want to call them, they are looking at that transfer portal, and they know those kids that are coming, that are on that transfer portal, and they know who they should get. The flip side of the transfer portal was there are a lot of people that are going to go there, and they're not going to end up anywhere, and I feel bad for them because they overshot themselves. They probably thought, oh, I can go to a big-time school. You know, I was at this FCS school really balling and doing well. No, you're not. That's not going to happen for you. If you don't take advantage of your opportunity wherever you are, you may lose your best shot. And I think that's what the transfer portal is also going to do to some of these young men.
No, it's a good point, Buck. Yeah, it's a good point. And the whole idea that you have to sign a sheet, and you and I have talked about it, checking off that there was no tampering is laughable.
Well, hey Bill, they're still using the fax machine. They're still using the fax machine in this day and age. And I just think that's the funniest thing. But I agree with you to say I'm going to sign this letter. We've known that's been crazy for a while. I think what's going to happen, we're going to see how this works for the first year or two. If it's really, really crazy, they're going to have to figure out a way to scale it back. But it's open now, and that's there, and we have to see what it's going to look like. It's going to change a lot of fortunes for some people. But I like what Nick says, and I think you agree with me on this. The rich could get a lot richer, and that might not be what they intended for the transfer rule to be. But whoever knows the legalities and whoever knows how to get after it the best and whoever knows how to do that well, I would look over in Tuscaloosa and watch how they're doing it and emulate them as much as I can. And if you're not, you're going to get behind the eight ball.
Buck, always a pleasure, sir. See you next week.
All right, Bill. Have a good one now.